Amen indeed. Amen indeed. I first want to say that children of all ages are welcome to stay with us throughout the service. But if you find that you want to not sit in the sermon, we have a children's program. And if you're here, just kind of make your way over, and Ruth and Hannah will, or Haley, sorry, will be glad to teach you this morning. I have the privilege this morning of introducing our guest preacher, the Reverend Dr. Frodo Okalam. I find this such a great privilege because she is a spiritual teacher and a wisdom source for me, and has been through my spiritual journey through MCC, and so it's just really kind of exciting to have her here. Reverend Dr. Frodo Okalam was licensed in the MCC in 1985 and ordained in 1989. She's the leader of Sister Spirit, which was started in 1985, a women's spirituality group that invites women of all spiritual walks to come and worship together and explore the divine and the goddess together. She has been a friend of Portland MCC for many years, and before that, a member and an attender here, and I just want to give a warm welcome to the Reverend Dr. Frodo Okalam.
Yeah, she didn't say the date, but it was 1977 when I first walked in the door, the back door, and sat in the back, like I'm sure others here have. That's another story, though, that I'm not going to tell this time. Thank you, everybody, and thank you for the music. Wow. I'm usually over there when I'm here. It's strange to be up here instead. I kind of wish I was here last week because I heard you had the blessing of the animals, and that would have been wonderful. And Nathan said, I don't even try to preach or ask anybody to preach when on that Sunday. But, you know, the pictures are posted, so, you know, take a look if you missed it, too. I want to make a couple of greetings and announcements first so that I don't forget, because once I launch into stories, you know, I forget what I'm supposed to remind you of. The first announcement is that on Sunday the 23rd, here's the picture, this flyer will be up on the bulletin board downstairs, I guess. And you can come and see me, and I'll give you one. I have a few. But we're inviting anyone who wants to share stories and memories and songs and prayers about Reverend B.J. Bo McDaniels to come to our house after your meeting. So we set it for 2:00 because Nathan said, well, we have a budget meeting, so I want to make sure everybody has a chance to be at that. But come and see me for my address. It's at our house, so we didn't put the address on the flyer, but I'll tell you where. And I'm going to be telling one of those stories today. If you don't know Bo, please come anyway. The stories are good, and the songs will be good, and, you know, it'll be a time of sharing. All right, the second thing is, so I just told you now that my dearest friend and mentor and light of my life, really, passed away just a couple weeks ago. And in the meantime, I've been hearing from people that you know, some of you. So I want to give you those greetings. Bo lived with Terry Holt, Spider, and his partner David. So if anybody knows them on the Lay Link or whatever, they say hi. Frank Zerilli, also a longtime layperson in MCC, talked to him quite a bit. I talked to Reverend Elder Frieda Smith. Some of you have know Frieda or have heard of her. Some amazing, amazing moving of the spirit and sermons from her. And we talked for quite a while. And I heard from another former pastor of this congregation, Reverend Dolores Berry, which I didn't want to, I wanted to call Dolores, but she just lost her partner like 4 or 5 days before Bo passed, so I didn't want to intrude, but she, as soon as she heard, she asked me to call her, and it was like 11 o'clock at night my time, so I don't know what it was her time, you know, but she was awake, and we talked for quite a while, and she said to tell you, Judy Kaiser was born in Pendleton, Oregon, and was a member of this congregation, and then she became partners with Dolores. And if you never heard Reverend Dolores Berry, if you ever get a chance, you want to hear her, because she's the most amazing soul singer you ever heard. Seriously, right? Everybody who's heard? And yeah, and if you haven't, there are recordings, but those don't capture the, you know, the experience of the spirit life. And Judy was her partner in ministry. She said to tell you all that Judy told her she wasn't afraid, and she never has been afraid in her life since she first walked in the doors of MCC Portland, and that you all, this congregation, gave her that courage. So, you know, just hold that and know that, you know, Judy's here with you in spirit too. I want to talk about courage today, so it's a good way of introducing what I have to bring to you. When I talked to Nathan, when Nathan asked me, he said, well, we will have just done the blessing of the animals. Maybe you could talk about trees. And some of you know I'm a tree person, okay? I talk about trees. You know, I'm not primarily talking about trees, but I said, well, Nathan, probably trees will come into it. And I didn't know how yet, but certainly trees did. So listen for the tree. All right. So you heard the readings that I asked for today. As I was thinking about, you know, well, you know, what am I going to say? How am I going to speak now, even? I was putting books away because it's been almost a year since we've been in our new house, and I still haven't unpacked. some of you have moved. You know what I'm talking about. So I saw this book on my shelf as I was putting it on the shelf, and it says The Outrageous Pursuit of Hope. The Outrageous Pursuit of Hope. And I thought, wow, that's it. That's in a nutshell, what I want to bring to this meeting this morning. The Outrageous Pursuit of Hope. So come back to that. But that first reading is from this book. And, you know, I just want to invite you before I begin also to think about if there's something in your life that is so, you know, much a block. I just want to say a block, a struggle, something that you'd have to be outrageous to hope for it to change. Okay, just think for a minute. Okay, just hold that, whatever that seemingly impossible thing is, in the back of your minds. And then we'll come back to it again. I was trying to think about, you know, what can you say when the person who inspired your whole life passes? What can you say? About 2 years ago, I went to visit my friend Bo in New Mexico, and we spent some time together. We traveled around New Mexico, saw all kinds of amazing things, and went to Taos, went to the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum, and we went on this little gravel road, which it was funny because after we'd gone about 10 miles down this gravel road, there was a sign that said, "Road is unpaved." We laughed for a long time about that, all the way to wherever we were going. And we said, next time we come back, we'll go to the Georgia O'Keeffe home and studio. Georgia O'Keeffe's an amazing artist. If you don't know just who she is when I say the name, those big, bright, beautiful flowers, and some of them like the insides of flowers, okay? Those are Georgia O'Keeffe's work, and she's amazing. Anyway. So we made this plan. We said next year, it actually ended up being 2 years, when you come, we'll go see that. So we made the plan. We made it for the latest week we could before I start teaching school, because I only have the summers off. So But New Mexico, you don't want to be outside of New Mexico in July, right? So we made it for the September 16th to 22nd. So the day before I left, I got a call from Spider saying, well, Bo's not well, and we just took her to the hospital. Maybe you should make your plans for a different time. So I called the airlines and canceled my flight, which was the next morning. And then I thought, well, what if it's just, you know, what if it's just something that she gets over and then I can come? And so I called back and I said, Spider, is it okay if I come anyway? And he said, yeah, come anyway. It's an infection, you know, she's probably going to get out tomorrow. So I called the airline and beg. And they said, we're supposed to charge you the full amount. No, please, please, please. So they put me back on the flight. Thank you, Southwest Airlines. And so I went, and she got out of the hospital the next day, and we were hanging out together. We went to church at MCC Albuquerque. They had a mingling of the waters, beautiful music like we had today. It was wonderful. We took communion, all of us together, and a beautiful time. And then we just hung out. She showed me how to download pictures onto a thumb drive, and she was trying to explain football to me, which is one of those exercises in outrageous hope, right? Because I don't understand football, and I'm probably never going to understand football. But, you know, we did dumb stuff like that. And then she started to feel bad again. So she went back in. They said, oh, pneumonia, and they started to treat her for that. Then they said congestive heart failure. And then they told her friend, but not her, you better call the relatives. So then they said, you have 30% heart function. So then we kind of knew, right? And so I was able to spend time, you know, just being in her presence. And the day I got back, she passed. So she waited until I was not there, right? You know, what do you say with someone who has that huge an impact on your life? Some of you knew me before I met Bo, okay? I crept in sort of in the back, like I said. Many of you ministered to me. Those are all stories I'll tell another time. But I didn't, you know, I began to read this book here. That's why I brought it. I'm gonna have hers. It's gonna be, anyway, but I began to read the Bible, right, and try to deal with, okay, what is this, you know, but didn't put a lot of it together yet until this moment. And I don't know if anybody has a one moment that kind of opened your whole life up to you, but this was mine. So I'm going to tell that story today because this is the moment when my whole life changed. Today, some of us go to the state capitol sometimes. How many of you been to the capitol? Okay, look at that. You guys rock. Okay? A bunch of people just raised their hand. Today, when we go to the capitol, we go to lobby for legislation, you know, that somebody's proposing, or we go to talk to our legislator, or we go even to talk to the governor. You know, we're going there for an event. But many of us have done that. Back in the day, back in 1981, which is the year I'm going to talk about, there was no legislation about justice for any of our people. There was no legislation anywhere, not just here. There was no legislatures who wanted to talk to, you know, trans people or bisexual people or gay people or lesbians. I mean, they didn't, you know, no, they would not have given us the time of day then. We had no hope of winning our rights ever, especially not in the state of Idaho. Anybody here from Idaho? Okay, yeah, you know, especially not there then. Beatings and arrests and firings were business as usual. You know, you could just expect that if you were going to be out on the job. No way, any way, would we have thought of asking for marriage rights. That was just completely, I mean, anybody mentioned that, oh, they're going to ask for marriage. We said, no, we're not. Because it was too outrageous. We couldn't have even thought about that. And Boise, Idaho is about the most repressive place you could think of. So, seriously. So MCC was going to have our district conference in Boise, May of 1981. And the week before our district conference, Jerry Falwell, okay, who remembers Jerry Falwell? Jerry Falwell was a televangelist who basically made his way, his fame, by attacking our people, saying we were sinful and, you know, going to hell and all that. He was there with a rally on the state capitol steps the week before our conference. So Bo said, as the pastor of MCC at Boise, I'd like to ask this conference, will you come and have a candlelight rally on the state capitol steps during our conference? And quite a few people in the conference raised their hand. Yes, we will come. And the people from MCC at Boise, some of them were willing to come, you know. And so we, how many were there? Some of you were there. Who was there? A couple people, okay. We marched at dusk, so candlelight march. I was afraid to carry a candle because my parents didn't know where I was. Okay, I told them some story about somebody I was visiting. Okay. And it was being televised regionally because she got the media to pay attention, probably because Jerry Falwell was there the week before. So I thought, whoa, you know, if my parents see that, they're going to know I lied to them, blah, 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 blah. So I wouldn't carry a candle. We went up the steps of the state capitol. And we held our rally there. There was about 200 of us or so on the Capitol steps. From the steps, we could look out and see the people hiding in the bushes, okay? And, you know, because they were afraid to be seen, but they wanted to hear it and be there. And we could see the people driving around and around in their cars, many of them with their headlights off so you couldn't see the license plate. Okay, these were the times in that place. Reverend Elder Frieda Smith, who I just talked to, as I said, she grew up in Pocatello, Idaho. Okay, Pocatello. And she preached, you know, she spoke, and she said, Idaho, the word Idaho means, look, the sun is coming up over the mountains. Wonder what that bell means. Okay, hopefully I can keep going. Look, the light is coming up over the mountains. And she said, this, we are right here turning on the lights in the state of Idaho so that nobody has to grow up in the dark closets ever again. So then Bo got up and she spoke with tears in her eyes about the courage of the people who were there risking their jobs, their families, and maybe even their lives. And when she said that, I thought, oh, no. You know, you are the number one prime person who's risking your life here. Because she announced her name. She said, I'm Reverend B.J. McDaniels. I'm pastor of MCC at Boise. Her name and address, home address, were in the Boise phone book. Okay. And I thought, if they figure out that you're female, they're going to know you're gay. Okay, some of you know Bo in those days. I mean, it was like the most obvious butch you could possibly imagine. So I was very afraid for her in that moment. And she said, you're going to walk down these steps and you're never gonna hide again. You're going to walk with your head held high from this point on. And I thought, wow, I could do that. I could do that. I could, from this moment, resolve never to hide again, not about who I am or who I love or what I believe. Because she also announced, I'm gay and I'm Christian. Just like that, I'm gay and I'm Christian. Wow. I could be out about who I am. Hi. Bells from on high. That's great. So then I, afterwards, after the march in the bar, right? That's where we had to congregate then. I was wondering, where'd she get her courage? Where does that kind of courage come from? I didn't have it. I mean, I was able to resolve that I wanted to do that, right? I was pursuing hope, but I didn't have any. And then I suddenly, you know, the light bulb came on, bing, and I thought, oh, yeah. Who was it that said, greater love has no one than to lay down their life for their friends? Who was that?
Jesus.
That was Jesus, yes. And that's where she got her courage. That's where. And I could have that too, the same way that she did. So that was the moment when I began to be out about everything in my life. We didn't have any hope. It was too outrageous. But we had a prayer. We had a prayer. And the prayer was, ask and you shall receive, seek and you shall find, knock and the door shall be opened. We had no experience of having any doors opened, okay? They were closed. But from that time, those of us who were there and those in that state, this is the first out LGBTQ anything they ever had in the state of Idaho, okay, in 1981. They'd never had a pride march. They'd never had anything open, public, announced to the public in that state at that time. But from that time on, we marched and we sought and we knocked and we knocked on the state house doors, and we began to do that movement like the Israelites through the Reed Sea, you know, and the waters parted. The waters literally did part for us. When they passed an anti-gay ballot measure here in Oregon in 1988, so 7 years after that, they passed the first ballot measure outlawing the governor's law outlawing discrimination in the state of Oregon. So they said, Governor, you can't ban discrimination. The people of Oregon said that. Whoa. So I was one of 18 people who blocked the Burnside Bridge and sat down and got arrested and dragged off to jail. First time I ever did anything like that. And some people said, oh, that'll just make people mad. But it also said, no more business as usual. No more outlawing our rights. This is not okay. You can't do this. We organized, we voted, we kept praying, we lobbied, we marched for other people's rights, because whenever anybody's rights are in danger, everybody's are. So we did that. And then our neighbors started marching with us and for us. And, you know, one by one, legislators started to come along and march with us. You know, police started to come along, march with us. Companies started to come along, march with us. Some of you saw that whole progression. All of a sudden, pride became the place to be. I'm going to tell you that story another time, too, about pride. But anyway, we, from that time on, did the work. And now we have a bisexual governor in the state of Oregon. Many people don't remember that about Kate Brown, but she is. And out about that. Now we have the right to marry. Who would have thought in those days? No way. No way. We did that. We did that. You know, it wasn't given to us. We pounded on the doors. door to door. I mean, hundreds of doors. You know, we did the work and we walked the walk and we knocked and the door actually opened. We stood, you know, at the ocean and the waters actually parted. Which, I mean, when things are hard right now, whoa, stop and look back and go, wait a minute here. Look at all these things that have happened that we never, never, never would have thought could happen. So what's the next door that you need to knock on, right? What's the next door? Start thinking about that. There's some justice doors. You know, maybe it's literally a bathroom door that needs to be knocked on, right? That needs to happen. Maybe it's our rights to have water be public and available to all of us. There are people fasting at the Capitol steps just a couple weeks ago for the right for all of us to have water and not have it privatized and taken away from us. There are people at Standing Rock right now. The largest encampment of Native Americans since Sitting Bull are there for their right to not have an oil pipeline across the rivers that provide life to their people. So there's people there taking that step, a big next step. And then, hello, stopping domestic violence. There's some of us that have been working on that for a long, long time, and more steps need to be taken. Okay, so, you know, whatever the biggest block, I know this congregation faces some challenges. Some of us face personal challenges, whatever they are. So now, here comes the tree part, okay? Nathan asked me, are you going to talk about trees? I just showed a video to my class. I had to teach ecofeminist spirituality at PSU. And I showed my class a video where a researcher named Suzanne Simard is her name, from the University of BC. She said, they're showing now, scientists, that there are trees. She called them mother tree. So, you know, we could say mother, father trees. They're not gendered. Those fir trees are not. They have both genders. So they are the biggest trees, the oldest trees, the strongest trees actually send nutrients through the fungal network to the little sprouts coming up and to whatever trees are struggling, even other species of trees. The big old trees nurture them literally with nutrients. Well, here's the thing. When those trees die, when they're struck by lightning, that's a different story too. When they're struck by lightning or whatever happens, they still, after they're dead, they continue to nurture all those other little trees with their DNA knowledge. They pass on their DNA to all those other, the rest of the forest, long after they're gone. Guess what? Our fallen elders do that for us. And the way they do it is through telling their stories. And not just elders, but any of you. When you knock, tell somebody. Okay, tell somebody. When somebody has inspired you by what they did, tell somebody. Tell it, write it down, put it on Facebook, take a picture, take a selfie, do everything you know, write songs, that's part of what I do. Put it out there because that's how we nurture the little sprouts coming up. So the ones that are our kids, yeah, we nurture them. The young people among us, but also our little sprouts inside that need to be nurtured and made to grow, right? Tell the stories because that's how we know that doors open. That's how we know that oceans part. Okay, whatever needs to happen, look at what has happened for our community. Wow. And tell it, because it's going to keep happening. Remember that thing that we were going to think about that we think is impossible, okay? Think of that thing right now, just for a second. You don't have to have even hope yet, okay? But be pursuing hope, okay? Outrageous hope. The most outrageous things have happened and can happen and will happen. You have to keep knocking, okay? So I'm just going to invite everybody here right now. From this point on, I want you to be outrageous. Amen? Amen. All right.